from deep inside your radio.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, redesign is an unending process. But other thoughts come to mind, more appropriate for this broadcast, from the Who Knew department. Who knew? Henry Kissinger gave his approval to the dirty war in Argentina in the 1970s, in which up to 30,000 people were killed. No. Really? The Nobel Peace Prize winner? Yes, according to newly declassified U.S. State Department documents. Well, why were they Kissinger, who was America's Secretary of State back then, urged the Argentinian military regime to act before Congress, our Congress, came back into session. Told the Argentinian military regime that Washington, before Congress reconvened, would not cause it, quote, unnecessary difficulties, unquote. The revelation, says the correspondent for the British newspaper The Guardian, the revelations are likely to further damage Mr. Kissinger's reputation. He's already been argued to have been involved in war crimes, involved in the 1973 Chilean coup. Man, that Latin America is a mess, isn't it? The new material obtained by the Washington-based National Security Archives under the Freedom of Information Act. Hey, we got to do something about that. Isn't that a violation of the Patriot Act to use the Freedom of Information Act? Or is it the other way around? The material consists of two memoranda of conversations that took place in October 1976. That is such ancient history. Why are we even with the visiting Argentinian Foreign Minister, Admiral Cesar Augusto Guzzetti, at the time the Congress, concerned about allegations of widespread human rights abuses, was about to approve sanctions against the military regime. According to a verbatim transcript of a meeting in 76, Kissinger reassured the foreign minister that he had U.S. backing in whatever he did. Look, our basic attitude is that we would like you to succeed, Kissinger said. I have an old-fashioned view that friends ought to be supported. The quicker you succeed, the better. The human rights problem is a growing one. We want a stable situation. We won't cause you unnecessary difficulties. If you can finish before Congress gets back, the better. Whatever freedoms you could restore would help. Unquote. Says an earlier State Department memorandum, one day earlier, there is a tendency to apply our moral standards abroad, and Argentina must understand the reaction of Congress with regard to loans and military assistance. The American people, right or wrong, have the perception that today there exists in Argentina a pattern of gross violations of human rights. The regime had been given carte blanche by the U.S. government to continue its activities. The revelations were announced at a conference in Argentina this weekend, confirmed suspicions at the time that the regime would not have continued to carry out atrocities unless it had the tacit approval of the United States, on which it was dependent for financial and military aid. An investigation into the disappearing of an estimated 30,000 people by the regime has begun in Argentina. Kissinger has been asked by the Chilean authorities to give evidence in connection with human rights abuses during the Chilean coup and the support he gave to the former dictator. He's likely to be asked to do the same in Argentina. He reportedly does not travel abroad without consulting his lawyers about the possibility of his arrest. Our friends, ladies and gentlemen, God bless our friends. Nowadays, our friends include Pakistan. Now, there'll be more on this broadcast about President Bush's recently declared interest in democracy and freedom all through the Muslim world. But our great ally and friend, even though it has weapons of mass destruction, has threatened its neighbor and does give home to terrorists, is Pakistan. It just fits those criteria. I'm not knocking the place. Nice place to go, I guess. Did you know that it's suspended from the Commonwealth of Nations, the former British Commonwealth? Yes. And its suspension has just been reaffirmed, according to what delegates at the organization's summit in Nigeria have just been told. New Zealand's Premier Helen Clark said there would be no change until Pakistan embraced Commonwealth demands for democratic and judicial reform. It was suspended in 1999 after a coup led by General Pervez Musharraf. He didn't shoot Musharraf. He is Musharraf. The Secretary General of the Commonwealth did say that Pakistan was moving in the right direction. The Commonwealth would not readmit the country until General Musharraf had stepped down as head of the armed forces and made further moves on reform. So those, God bless our friends, ladies and gentlemen. Now, you do know that this week President Bush announced he is retracting the steel tariffs that he instituted about a year and a half ago. And it was a great effort on the part of the administration, including White House Chief of Staff Andy Card appearing on some of the Sunday Yak shows this weekend to say this was because of our economy. President Bush was concentrating on our economy. The effort is to deny the apprehension widespread in Europe that the United States backed down on steel tariffs because the World Trade Organization declared our steel tariffs, here's a little term of art, illegal. More to the point, the Europeans had figured out that the way to kind of press the point home was to retaliate with tariffs against United States exports coming from key states Bush needs to win next year's election. Aha! They're getting smart, smarter than the Democrats. Andy Card said today on the Yak shows, the counter sanctions by the Europeans would have had a minuscule effect on our economy. Didn't deny that it would have had a big effect on Bush's reelection, however. And so the Europeans, thus emboldened, are now considering that since the United States and lately Russia are torpedoing the Kyoto Treaty on global warming, and European countries are trying to abide by the Kyoto Treaty, which means reducing greenhouse gases, which means their industry will be at a competitive disadvantage because they'll be spending more money on cleaning things up, that they'll apply the same tactic, sanctions against U.S. exports from states that President Bush might need to win re-election. We're not blinking, though. It's just so bright and we left our shades at home. Hello, welcome to the show.
So good to hear your voice again, baby, in my memory. You seem to stay so close and yet so far away. So close and yet so far away. We got a good connection and that's hard to find. I can't wait forever on this telephone line, 'cause it's getting late. And my room's so dark, I sure could use a little heart to heart. Yes, I sure could use a little heart to heart. But I'm so many miles from your loving, so many miles from your touch, so many roads standing between us, so many rivers to cross, so in between. operator, please try again. I got disconnected on the other end. I'm low on change and high on time. There's a lonesome whistle coming through the line. There's a lonesome whistle coming through the line. Now I'm so so many rivers to cross. Here comes that day again. Here comes that day again. The day I remember, 'cause it's a cold day in December, and I'm flying home. And inside I know that you're not here anymore, and you your name out, and I try so hard to ignore it, but today I know it. I know it. Here comes the pain again. Here comes the pain again. And as we start to touch down, my tears fall freely on the ground, and people try to help me.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the show. And fact-checking, ladies and gentlemen, is so important, not just in my work, but let's say if you're a candidate for president like Howard Dean.
Hey, Doug. I heard a report someplace today that the fake turkey story was not accurate. Is that true?
Is it fake? It was a real turkey, though, Howard, but it was not one for the meat. It was a mock turkey. I wonder if that's what.
All right.
We'll find out.
2 minute warning.
Yes. A real turkey. Okay. Thank you.
It was a real turkey, but it wasn't meant for them to eat.
You can just follow. It was reported in the Washington Post.
Okay.
Was it a fake turkey or a real
turkey? It was a real turkey that was a prop. It's sort of neither here nor there.
Well, it's here. Yes, it is in the Washington Post. It's also in the British, UK, the London Telegraph, which writes, the reputation of White House spin doctors for obsessively manipulating President George... This is a conservative newspaper. For obsessively manipulating President George Bush's image came under the spotlight again this week when it emerged the turkey he appeared to be serving to troops in Baghdad was not for eating. The photograph of a smiling Mr. Bush apparently proffering a platter with a huge succulent turkey to American soldiers on Thanksgiving was one of the new key images of his presidency, but it emerged that the Bush turkey had been a model, or prop, as Governor Dean just said, adorning the end of the buffet line, and soldiers were served their meals from cafeteria steam trays. White House officials told the Washington Post they didn't know the trophy turkey would be there, nor that Bush would pick it up. Bush picked up a decoration, according to the Washington Post, not a serving plate. A contractor had roasted and primped the turkey to adorn the buffet line while the soldiers were served from steam trays. The bird was not placed there in anticipation of Bush's stealthy visits at military sources, who added a trophy turkey is a standard feature of holiday chow lines. So that's one story that appears to be moving, in motion. How about this? The White House this week made a third approach in its attempt to land the controversy about whether a plane in flight spotted Air Force One on its secret flight to Baghdad that Thanksgiving day. First, White House Communications Director Dan Bartlett walked into the media cabin on the return flight from Baghdad and announced that Air Force One had come within sight of a British Airways flight over water. The British Airways pilot, Bartlett said, radioed to ask, "Did I just see Air Force One?" After a pause, the Air Force One pilot radioed back Gulfstream 5. After a long silence, according to the White House communications director, the British Airways pilot seemed to realize he was in on a secret and said, "Oh." Update, there was no British Airways flight involved, and President Bush's pilot had no such conversation with any aircraft, according to the Washington Post. British Airways told Reuters that two of its planes were in the area at the time. Neither radioed the president's plane, nor did either hear another aircraft make such an inquiry. That resulted in version two. Bartlett said the pilot of a British Airways plane had the conversation with air traffic control in London, not with Air Force One. British Airways then said that didn't happen either, and Britain's National Air Traffic Services agreed. The third version, White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan said the aircraft inquiring about Air Force One was in fact a non-UK operator. There had been a British Airways plane in the vicinity of Air Force One. The presidential pilots thought the query was coming from a pilot with a British accent, and so that's why they'd concluded it was a British Airways plane. We still don't know who the non-UK operator is. And the other question that is raised is, how could a British Airways plane in the vicinity of Air Force One for a good portion of its flight, according to White House Press Secretary, be near it for a good portion of its flight when the plane was averaging 665 miles an hour, much faster than commercial aircraft? Just questions. Just questions. Here's another one. What happened in Samarra? Spokespersons for the administration have been bragging on last weekend's events in Samarra, bragging on American troops killing 54 guerrillas during gunfights in that town. This is from a British newspaper. News from beyond the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Repeated visits to the scene, interviews with Iraqi civilians and U.S. soldiers, and close inspection of the battle damage by scores of correspondents have failed to eliminate several troubling and crucial questions. Where are the bodies? Did they exist? Accounts of the battle differ, sometimes alarmingly. On one issue, they've remained adamant. Only 8 people were killed in Samarra. 55 were injured. A senior official from the occupation authorities in Baghdad said with evident exasperation, "We said this would happen. It isn't right." Unquote. The Middle East correspondent from the British television network ITV, Julian Mannion, challenged the U.S. military's claims to have shot dead 54 Iraqi guerrillas. He said local officials put the death toll at just 8. But a briefing in the U.S., in Baghdad, the U.S. military was sticking by its story. "I trust the reports of my soldiers," says Brigadier General Mark Kimmett. Iraqi officials in Samarra had immediately challenged the U.S. version of events, accusing American soldiers of spraying fire at random people on the city streets and killing civilians. The U.S. military has been criticized repeatedly over its briefings to journalists, with the head of Rupert Murdoch's owned Sky News describing the U.S. briefings as poor and dominated by spin. What happened in Samarra? We know one thing for sure, ladies and gentlemen, about Samarra. No turkeys. No turkeys were killed in Samarra. And now, hey, you know, it's important to nail facts like that down. Now, Tales of Airport Security, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Mr. Shearer, I'm not sure whether this counts as a tale of airport security. I thought I'd send it along to you anyhow, writes. SPL. I was flying home from Salt Lake City on Friday evening. As I approached the line at the airport check-in counter to get my boarding pass, I was stopped by an extremely chatty TSA agent. He asked me what flight I was on, where I was going, whether I was checking any bags. And when I said no, he asked, "Why not?" Then said, "Just having a little fun with you." He also asked what my business was in Salt Lake City, how long I'd been there, with whom I'd met, and what I did for a living. He kept repeating that it was Friday and he was just having a little fun. But it sounded as if he was repeating questions from a script. He was smiling and laughing all the time, but the experience was slightly unnerving. I assume I didn't fit whatever profile with which he was trying to match me, since I was allowed into the line and got my boarding passes with no further incident. Oh, one more thing. On my flight out of Carlsbad, California the day before, as we passengers removed shoes for a run through the X-ray, the security agent was offering to tell us whether our shoes were deemed airport-friendly as part of the service. Jeff writes, "Dear Harry, 2 weeks ago while standing in line for baggage screening at Philadelphia International Airport, I suddenly realized I was still carrying my trusty Swiss Army knife in my pocket. Not wanting to lose it, I simply stuffed it into the bottom of my carry-on bag. It went right through the X-ray machine without being detected. A day later, on my return trip for, wait for it, Logan Airport in Boston, I still had the knife in my carry-on. For whatever reason, they X-rayed my bag twice, but still didn't pick up the knife." And another knife tale. I recently went to Finland. The cheapest tickets I could find from LA was through Chicago to Stockholm and then on to Finland. This itinerary involved getting nearly naked at both LAX and O'Hare. Everything went through the X-ray machine, no problems there. On arrival in Stockholm, time yet for one more X-ray machine. Having twice passed muster with America's best and brightest, I was more than a bit surprised when the polite young Swedish security guard stopped me and asked to have a look at the pocket knife in my backpack. I had forgotten about it from an earlier hiking trip. I was profusely apologetic as I dug through my pack, trying to figure out where I'd put it. "It's really not a problem," said the friendly guard. "I just want to have a look at it." I finally found it and handed it over, whereby she opened it up, looked at it for 2 seconds, and then handed it back with a smile. "Thank you, and have a nice flight." Unpacking my bags in Finland, I also found a corkscrew I'd forgotten about. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. You know, there are more copyrighted features than just one on this broadcast. You know that. Might be time for me to read the trades for you. A little background first. You know the wave of do-it-yourself shows, home redecorating shows, makeover shows. Very popular in Britain, very popular here. You may have heard the story on Marketplace on public radio earlier this week about somebody who actually had their house redecorated on one of those shows and found out that they were doing it all with, like, paper clips and toilet paper. I mean, just basically look good for the camera, but then they had to fix up their house after their house was fixed up. In Britain, there are a couple of these shows now that involve fixing up historic houses. And preservationists are complaining about the same thing, that they're replacing wood windows with plastic. But here's the latest news from the advertising column of the New York Times. The ABC television network is making its biggest branded entertainment deal, signing Sears Roebuck. Is there still a Roebuck in Sears? Yes. As the centerpiece sponsor of a reality series, Extreme Makeover Home Edition. The deal, estimated to be costing Sears more than $1 million. Does Sears have $1 million? Includes the placement of products like Craftsman Tools, Kenmore Appliances, and Land's End Home Furnishings in each of the 6 episodes during the series. There could be scenes of trucks delivering merchandise from Sears, plumbers and other workers from Sears making repairs, and visits to Sears stores by the show's makeover team cast. What a treat for the cast. Sears will also buy commercial time during each episode. The deal is emblematic of the recent trend of marketers becoming intrinsically involved in shaping the content of entertainment programming. The goal, to counter the growing ability of viewers to zap expensive commercials. Says Dan Longest, Senior Vice President for Integrated Marketing at ABC. The attraction is that the advertisers can take advantage of the opportunity to showcase product in real-life situations. That's right, reality shows are real-life. Well, they're real-life situations. Sometimes with adult language. Sears is sensitive to the intensifying criticism about sponsored entertainment, says Janine Bousquet, Executive Vice President and Chief Customer Marketing Executive at Sears. Quote, "We're extremely choiceful about what opportunities we pursue," she said, "because consumers are smart and want to be treated with respect," unquote. We're choiceful. We're not Englishful, but we're choiceful. Yeah, and they treat us with respect. Mr. Longus said ABC would never take it to the point where it would seem like a bunch of logos slapped on a show. The story is not about Sears per se, but about the family in each episode, and Sears plays a role in the personality of the show. Thank you. ABC is exploring sponsorship roles for other advertisers on the series that would include product placements in categories like packaged foods, Mr. Longus said. I guess that's what they eat while their house is being redone. Let's relax and have a Cheeto. The ABC deal with Sears is separate from a venture between ABC and the Mindshare division of WPP to develop and produce programming aimed at family viewers that would include sponsored elements like product placement. Extreme Makeover Home Edition is the first broadcast entry in the hot category of home improvement family reality programming. Ladies and gentlemen, let's all be choiceful, shall we? A lesson we can take when I read the trades for you. It's a copyrighted feature, and no, it's not.
If it's pleasure you're about, and you feel like stepping out, all you got to shout is, let me off uptown. If it's rhythm that you feel, then it's nothing to conceal. All you got to steal is, let me off uptown. Rib joints, juke joints, hip joints. Where could a fella go to top it? Want to pitch a ball, and you can't afford a hall. All you got to call is, let me off uptown. Come on and let me off.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know, a lot of radio broadcasts, they get into their third decade or so, and, you know, they ossify. They get into a groove, they get into a habit, a set of habits and routines, and you can pretty much set your calendar by what they're going to do any particular moment of the broadcast routine. We're trying to avoid that here in Le Show, and so here as we lurch forward into the third decade, we're proud to announce this week the launching of a new feature, Technology Talk.
Thanks, Harry, and welcome to Technology Talk.
Wait.
I'm Ralph the Talking Computer.
I know you're Ralph the Talking
Computer.
I was going to host this.
Well, I know, but as a technological creature,
yeah.
Who better than me?
All right, but...
Besides, if you picked out this lame theme music, I shudder to think how you'll handle the actual content.
Oh, now, see, that's so unfair. This is... I just thought this was very retro and kind of fun.
First, even though your generation seems to think otherwise,
yes.
Fun is a noun, not an adjective.
All right, point well taken.
Second, this music isn't retro. It's natro.
Natro.
If you didn't have access to sophisticated glitch removal audio technology, it would sound like desiccated dog poop being scraped across your windshield.
Windshield. Well, I do have access to that technology, and that brings us back to the subject of the feature, technology talk. So if you want to do it, Ralph, have at it. Do you have the material?
Yes.
Okay.
I took the liberty of making personal copies of all your technology news clippings, and then password protecting the one I wanted to read.
Very clever. The vote about...
Don't give it away, schmuck.
Okay.
Could I have some music that maybe was recorded in this century?
Sure. Here you go. Technology Talk with Ralph the Talking Computer.
Here's a new technology called Vocaloid. Financed by the Yamaha Corporation, allows users to cast their own, or anyone else's, songs in a disembodied but exceedingly lifelike concert-quality voice. Just as a synthesizer might be programmed to play a series of notes like a violin one time and then like a tuba the next, a computer-equipped Vocaloid will be able to sing whatever combination of notes and words the user feeds it. The first generation of the software will be available for $200. But its arrival raises the prospect of a time when anyone with a laptop will be able to repurpose any singer's voice or even bring long-gone virtuosos back to life.
That's amazing. Isn't it virtuosi?
Yes.
No?
And a single strand of spaghetti is a spaghetto. Will you?
Okay.
The human voice has proven the most difficult of all sounds to synthesize.
Hmm.
Digital technology can produce something clear enough to convey meaning, but only in a clipped monotone that sounds more like a robot than a real live person.
Well,
but is such a clock. A convincing human voice, spoken or sung, with all its complex, flowing articulations and quivering uncertainties has been unattainable. God, what crap.
Ralph, editorializing is not a part of the format of Technology Talk. What's the problem?
The problem?
Yeah.
This is creatures clap. Since when is human speech the be-all and the end-all?
Well,
do I speak in a clipped monotone?
Do you really?
Don't answer that.
Okay.
Let me tell you something, Mr. Human Speech on the radio.
Radio, yeah.
I won a Yaki Award this year.
A Yaki?
Yes, sir.
Right.
Don't play dumb. You were invited to MC the dinner.
Whatever.
It's the Talking Computer Awards.
The Talking Computer Awards.
I won for poetic recitation.
Wow, I had no idea, Ralph. You don't share a lot of your accomplishments with me. As long as the music has stopped, would you like to give us a sample?
Sure.
Okay.
Literally.
This
is from the MP3 of my winning performance.
Ah, excellent.
Let me live in a house by the side of the road where the race of men goes by. The men who are good, the men who are bad, as good or as bad as I would not sit in the critic's seat, nor hurl the cynic's ban. Let me live in a house by the side of the road and be a friend to man.
It's very nice.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's sentimental garbage. Like that's what I aspire to be, is a friend to man.
Well, all right, okay.
Same crap.
Ralph.
But I sold it.
Yeah, you did.
Anywho.
Yeah. Let's get back to tech talk. Get back to this Vocaloid, would you please?
You got it. To create the software's database, technicians record a singer performing as many as 60 pages of scripted articulations, like hep, pep, lep. Assorted pitches and techniques like glissandos and legatos are also thrown in the mix. With all the combinations, the process takes a week of 5-hour singing days. Zero G Limited, a London-based company, is using Vocaloid to create Leon, described as a virtual soul vocalist, and Lola, his female counterpart. A Vocaloid version of the song, Amazing Grace, recorded with prototype technology, yet still more human sounding than any previous vocal synthesis, was released on Yamaha's website. Quickly, That sample had internet message boards and chat rooms buzzing.
Wow.
Big deal.
What do you mean?
A rumor of a new Paris Hilton video can do that.
All right, Ralph, your skepticism is born of more than just your normal crotchety attitude?
Yeah.
Hmm?
Kill the music. Mm-hmm. Now tell me if this doesn't move you to a lacrimose experience.
Lacrimose experience.
Amazing Grace. How sweet. The sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found. Was blind, but now I see.
Wow, nice vibrato there on C, Ralph.
Hey, are those tears I see?
I'm impressed. I'd say, who needs Vocaloid?
Thanks, babe.
Wow.
And I'm taping you, unironically.
I appreciate that. Ralph, the talking computer with today's premier edition of Technology Talk, just another new feature, freshening up the sound of Le Show. Ralph, thank you again.
My simulacrum of pleasure.
This is Le Show, time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
A lot of people sorry this week. First, in Northern California, Cape Coral Councilman Mickey Rosato may have violated two state laws during his election campaign this year by claiming he had a bachelor's degree. He's now issued an apology. Quote, I would like to simply apologize for a statement I had said two or three times in regards of my education. I have not graduated from college yet, but have attended and wanted to let the public know that I continue my studies in the near future to get my bachelor's degree. And again, if you have any questions, please call me. Unquote. Why would you think that guy had a bachelor's degree? The Catholic Church issued a formal apology to the victims of child abuse by clergy people in Ireland. Publishing a long-awaited report in Dublin, the Catholic primate, it's not what you think, it's a person, Archbishop Sean Brady apologized for the failures of pastoral responsibility in handling such cases and spoke of his deepest sorrow for the hurt caused to victims and their families. The study reveals that almost 4 out of 5 members of the public do not think the church has dealt with the problem adequately. The Archbishop said the study, Time to Listen, made painful reading. It's the first time the Catholic Church has ever commissioned an independent study into the impact of child abuse by Catholic clergy. The report makes 19 recommendations to the church. After being labeled the Scrooge who spoiled Christmas for thousands of Long Island kids, officials from radio station WBAB have apologized. Last Monday, radio anchor John Parise announced there is no Santa. After 2 days of backlash from listeners, he apologized on the air. But he added that he's not sorry for what he said, but how he said it. He said his comments were meant to get folks back into the original spirit of Christmas. A resident of Eugene, Oregon, who passed himself off as Dave Barry, has apologized to the nationally syndicated humor columnist. Rob Zako, a member of a group opposed to a plan to build a hospital in Springfield, Oregon, wrote the fraudulent column in a newsletter and it went out on the internet. Barry asked Zako for an apology and got one. Barry says people have sometimes put their names on his work, but he couldn't think of another example of someone putting his name on their work. Dateline Australia, Andrew Bartlett is the leader of an opposition party, the Democrats, in Australia. His political future is in the balance after he publicly apologized over a drunken incident in which he abused and physically assaulted a Liberal senator. He said he'd brought his party in the Senate into disrepute and acknowledged he had personal health issues. He released a written apology and made a private apology to Jeannie Ferris, the senator whom he verbally and physically abused on the floor of the chamber. I apologize to the public and to members and supporters of the party, as obviously my actions have brought the party and indeed the Senate into disrepute. He's also canceled a study tour to Indonesia. Another opposition leader in Australia, Mark Latham, who once broke the arm of a taxi driver, said the incident would weaken public confidence in members of parliament. Senator Bartlett's clash with Senator Ferris came after she asked him to return 5 bottles of wine he had taken from a Liberal Christmas party. Senator Ferris said Senator Bartlett was affected by alcohol when he used abusive language and grabbed her by the arm, causing bruising. Other senators refused to comment on whether Senator Bartlett has a drinking problem. Acadians in the maritime provinces of Canada are celebrating a decision by the Canadian government to endorse a royal proclamation acknowledging the wrongs done to their ancestors during the expulsions of the 18th century. That was a century when it was a period when the Brits were expelling a lot of folks. Euclide Chiasson, head of the Société Nationale des Acadiens, said the proclamation was approved by the federal cabinet. The Acadian Society wrote Queen Elizabeth several months ago asking the Crown to consider an acknowledgement of the expulsions which began in 1755 and ended 8 years later. Earlier efforts to seek a royal apology were dropped. Buckingham Palace responded by saying the Queen would heed the advice of her Canadian ministers. It was accepted unanimously by the Canadian cabinet. The proclamation will be signed next week by the Governor General. We finally have a document that recognizes the events surrounding that very sad part of our history, says Chiasson. 2005 is the 250th anniversary of the expulsions. The decision by British governors to remove an entire ethnic population, that would be called ethnic cleansing today, the French-speaking Acadians, had consequences that resonated for generations. It's why people play accordions in Louisiana. So, the Queen apologizes for people playing accordions in Louisiana. Peruvian Vice President Raul Diaz-Canseco, who faces congressional corruption charges that could bar him from office for 10 years, admitted this week that he had lied to the country, but he stopped short of resigning. I deeply regret having lied about my personal affections. He made a grave error over personal relationship that led him to quit as foreign trade minister. The grave error was become a terrible nightmare was sparked by a mistaken attempt to protect the people involved, he said. He took no questions. Japan's largest car maker, Toyota, is withdrawing two advertisements for its Chinese-made luxury sports utility vehicles, advertisements it was running in China, amid growing protests that they were offensive. We regret that the two purely commercial advertisements have led to misunderstanding and unpleasantness among readers, said a Toyota spokesman, Mr. Yang. One of the advertisements in dispute depicts two stone lions, a popular Chinese cultural symbol. It shows them saluting and bowing to Toyota's Land Cruiser. The other shows a Land Cruiser tugging a heavy-duty truck on a Tibetan highland. The truck's trademark is too small to be identified. However, the vehicle looks similar to Chinese brand trucks. Got to be sensitive when you're doing business in China, I guess. And an Atlanta Falcons player angered some listeners of a popular Atlanta morning radio show this week when he made disparaging comments about AIDS on World AIDS Day. Defensive end Patrick Kearney issued an apology on Wednesday, 2 days after questioning why there isn't also a World Cancer Day. The apology is of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, finally, some news from beyond the bubble. One of Britain's most high-profile charities was ordered to end criticism of military action in Iraq by its powerful U.S. wing to avoid jeopardizing financial support from Washington and corporate donors, according to a British newspaper, The Guardian. Internal emails reveal Save the Children UK came under enormous pressure after it accused coalition forces of breaching the Geneva Convention by blocking humanitarian aid. Senior figures at Save the Children U.S. demanded the withdrawal of the criticism and an effective veto on any future statements blaming the invasion for the plight of Iraqi civilians suffering malnourishment and shortages of medical supplies. 6 weeks after organizers of an international donors conference, remember that, in Madrid, said that more than $3 billion in grants had been pledged to help Iraq, a new World Bank tally verifies grants of only $685 million for next year. The gap seems to have occurred for two reasons. Some countries like Japan changed the nature of their commitment after the conference from immediate aid to slower long-term help, and some had left their intentions unclear, were incorrectly assumed to be giving aid. Many experts also say donation pledges often do not materialize in the end or come in the harder-to-count form of credits for the purchase of commodities. The Bush administration doesn't dispute the gap, but officials say it's too early for an accurate count. A former Israeli intelligence official charged this week that Israeli agencies produced a flawed picture of Iraqi weapons capabilities and substantially contributed to mistakes made in the U.S. and British pre-war assessments on Iraq. And two straws in the wind, an Iraqi colonel who commanded a frontline unit during the buildup to the war has revealed he was the one who passed top-secret information to British intelligence warning that Saddam Hussein had deployed weapons of mass destruction that could be used on the battlefield against coalition troops in less than 45 minutes. He said cases containing WMD warheads were delivered to frontline units, including his own, towards the end of last year. He said he had no knowledge of any plans by Saddam to use weapons to attack British bases in Cyprus and other NATO targets, something Tony Blair had claimed. This colonel said he doubted that Iraq under Saddam had this capability. Local commanders were told they could use the weapons only on the personal orders of Saddam. And, on the other hand, Iraqi scientists never revived their long-dead nuclear bomb program and, in fact, lied to Saddam Hussein about how much progress they were making, Iraqi physicists now say. Before the first Gulf War, the chief of the weapons program resorted to blatant exaggeration in telling Iraq's president how much bomb material was being produced. Ladies and gentlemen, who the heck knows? Ladies and gentlemen, this is going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, across the universe through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America on WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz, sweeping across the vast plains of North America via Sirius satellite radio, and girdling the globe via the internet whenever you want it at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it would be just like you being choiceful in your Christmas giving, if you agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show Playlists, usually available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long.